For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free weekly Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, and happy thoughts for viewers in Brisbane, who won silver in our all-time views by city, edging out nearby Melbourne at number 3. And edging out is a Canadian-Australian shared joke, where being just 1,700 kilometres apart makes two cities nearby. Then I have some unhappy thoughts from, and for, climate alarmists who are convinced that Donald Trump's latest and most evil sin against the climate, though it's hard to keep up, is that he, quote, could be derailing a major global climate report, end quote. And we all know how much we need another one of those doorstoppers. The document in question is the next IPCC assessment report, that's AR7 to the Cognoscenti. And according to the Washington Post, whose owner just declared to our astonished delight that it will now champion personal and economic liberty editorially, so maybe good sense on science won't be far behind, but for now they're saying part of the Orange Lord's evil plan is that he has, quote, barred federal scientists and diplomats from attending a key global climate event in China this week, end quote. Well, whoop-de-doo, and not just because anyone who thinks China is a world leader on climate is missing the point. Which is that surely these people possess fairly modern personal computers, maybe even the portable kind that the kids call laptops, which may have things like Ethernet ports, and certainly have built-in Wi-Fi, which is a marvelous modern invention that allows you, via the internet, to connect with people remotely using such things as video conferencing. And that lets you save a whole lot of jet fuel CO2, though unfortunately you can't then sample the canapes. There's a whole lot of feeble bleating about this meeting, in the course of which Reuters, for instance, actually blurts out that, quote, the Hangzhou meeting from 24 to 28 February is expected to make a few key decisions that will shape the outcomes of the next climate assessment, including around the role of carbon removal and capture technology. China's foreign ministry said on Thursday it was unaware of the withdrawal of U.S. participants, end quote. So, it's much ado about nothing. Especially as the Post piece also propagandizes that, quote, past IPCC reports have made clear that human burning of fossil fuels and the greenhouse effect have the planet on the brink of catastrophic levels of warming, end quote. Which they don't. But if they did, why would you need another one to make the same claim, false or true? Is the plan really to save the planet one committee meeting at a time? And speaking of saving the planet, Canada's savior to the manor-born Mark Carney has some plan or another to do it using carbon offsets, whatever those are, since the marvelous carbon tax that he and his Liberal Party long defended is apparently suddenly, like, totally uncool if voters don't care for it. But the problem is, as Jamie Sarkanak wrote in the National Post, that Carney thinks that carbon credits work like magic, but, as is so often the case with magic, he can't really explain how. Just as Carney's main rival for the Liberal leadership, Chrystia Freeland, quote, vows to scrap Canada's consumer carbon pricing regime in favour of alternatives to be developed through wide-ranging consultations, end quote. Ah, the common touch. Marvellous. Except for the bit where she's been on this issue for many years and in power for a decade, and all she's really figured out is that the one thing she stridently championed is rubbish. According to a characteristically credulous reporter, quote, Freeland says her plan will build durable, lasting climate progress without making Canadians pay the cost, end quote. So, she too already knows what it'll do, just not what it is or how it'll do it. Like magic. By the way, I should mention here that between the time we put out the newsletter and the time we filmed the video, Carney actually trampled Freeland in the Liberal leadership contest, so her actual plans, such as they were, no longer matter, only his. But it's revealing that they both engaged in the same kind of magical thinking. And now, a word from our sponsor, which as always is you. Because at the Climate Discussion Nexus, we don't get lavish government money. We're not backed by huge foundations. We're crowdfunded. We're dependent on your one-time or monthly contributions, including now the thanks button on YouTube, if that's where you're watching us, to put out the newsletter, to make these videos, and to keep pushing back against climate alarmist idiocy. I actually think the battle is going quite well, but it's not won yet, so please help us push on to the finish line. In the newsletter, we also say, careful with that data, Eugene. Because a new study of NOAA's temperature adjustment finds a lot of chaos in the methodology rather than a set of clear and consistently applied corrections. And that kind of chaos is exactly what you'd expect if, say, they were fiddling the data to cool the past and heat the present, rather than starting with sound statistical procedures and then cleaning up messy readings. Oh, and we thought Scientific American might be pulling back slightly from its obsession with climate alarmism. They even ran an item, Why Temperatures Swung by 90 Degrees Fahrenheit in Parts of US, that didn't blame climate. But alas, they're not firmly on the wagon yet, given a piece by their senior opinion editor, and it's not actually clear why such a publication would have such a thing, arguing that, quote, the U.S. military will be less prepared to fight if climate cuts proceed. The U.S. Department of Defense suddenly pretending that climate change isn't real is penny-wise and pound-foolish, end quote. Remember when science was about atomic weight and the laws of thermodynamics and that boring old junk? Because they apparently don't. If they did, as someone was bound to blurt out eventually, though amazingly it was Canada's federal government, albeit the Department of Agriculture and not one of the many agencies convinced that they are or should be the Ministry of Climate Change, Canada, a northern nation whose massive farm sector perseveres with dangerously short growing seasons, would actually be better off if it got a bit warmer. Duh, really? Speaking of which, here we grant an I told you so to University of Guelph economist Ross McKittrick for an article in Nature Scientific Reports that looked at claims that warming would wither crops worldwide and found that, of all things, they'd muffed the math, left out or withheld data, and made unclear leaps of logic, all of which, strangely, tended to push the social cost of carbon higher than it really is. And scientists are lining up to thank him for fixing their mistake, and journalists are lining up to tell you about it. Right? Guys? Gals? Anybody? While we wait, and from the Nothing It Cannot Do and We Are All Going to Die files combined, Grist warns us of, quote, what climate change means for bird flu and the soaring price of eggs. Extreme weather is shifting the migratory patterns of birds, increasing the chances of deadly avian flu outbreaks on farms, end quote. Because there never were epidemics before climate change struck in whenever it was, unless you count the 15 recorded ones in the U.S. between 1959 and 1995, for instance. And also the article says, quote, in recent years, extreme weather events like drought and flooding have disrupted food supply chains and sent shockwaves through the economy that end up hitting grocery shoppers, end quote. Like a drought on the Mississippi in 2022, which never had those before, unless you count from 1988 to 90, the 1930s, the 1890s, the 1870s, the early 1860s, and that kind of historical nonsense. In the newsletter, we also respond to an alert viewer's question whether it was true that the United States, despite withdrawing from the Paris Agreement, was in fact the only country in the world to meet its obligations. And we respond by, of all things, doing research. The open-minded kind, where you actually look around and see what you discover, not the sort with predetermined results. And what we found, strangely, is that there's no end of commentary online about Paris and why it's great and what it means and how tremendously it's not working and we're all going to die. But there's almost no attention to this surely pertinent but boringly practical question of who's doing what they said they would and how and what difference it makes. Apparently such tawdry practical questions as, is it working, are beneath those whose destiny is to reshape our lives in ways we don't want. For instance, in what will no doubt come as relief across the UK, quote, we are absolutely not saying everyone needs to be vegan, end quote, according to Emily Nurse, who is, quote, head of net zero at the UK government's climate change committee, end quote. Oh, how kind. You can still have some meat. A bit. But unfortunately, the Times reports, quote, the CCC has outlined sweeping changes to homes, transport, energy, and farming to meet its suggested new goal of an 87% cut in emissions by 2040, end quote. The Guardian claims that, quote, giving up two doner kebabs worth of meat a week will be enough to keep the UK within safe climate limits by the end of the next decade, as more drastic changes in behavior can be avoided if the government takes action on greenhouse gases from energy, transport, and industry, the UK's climate advisors have said, end quote. And yes, the doner kebabs are exquisitely multicultural. But the notion of avoiding drastic changes in behavior if only the government imposes them forcibly by shutting down heating and flying and manufacturing is fatuous. Oh, and remember how climate activists were absolutely, positively not coming for your gas stove? Another Telegraph story notes that, quote, the committee called on the government to phase out the sale of gas cookers, as well as petrol and diesel-powered lawnmowers, via restrictions on their sale, end quote. So, you didn't really want any of that stuff, and if you did, haha, too bad. Quote, the number of cattle and sheep in the UK needs to drop 27% by 2040 in order to free up land for tree planting and peatland to cut methane emissions, the CCC said, end quote. But maybe you can eat factory-based meat or a bug. In this environment, so to speak, arguably we should no longer be astonished at the lengths to which journalists will go to blame climate change for problems that are obviously caused by other things. For instance, in a recent piece in Climate Cosmos called Climate-Induced Migration, Gaza's Displacement Dilemma. Because if there were anyone on Earth where even a credulous observer might think that other issues loomed larger than a barely detectable rise in temperatures since 1850, it would surely be Gaza. Instead, the piece proceeds to illustrate just how to write wildly distorted copy with a straight typeface. Starting with, drumroll please, quote, the climate in Gaza is changing faster than in many other parts of the world. The temperatures are rising at a rate 20% swifter than the global average, end quote. Just like everywhere, right? So, it's useful for any journalist suddenly confronted with an editor wanting something plausible on, quote, 18 ways global warming is reshaping childhood in the US, end quote, or, quote, 25 unseen effects of climate change on mental health, end quote, and needing tips on somehow twisting the absurdly far-fetched into superficially smooth discourse. For our part, we prefer actual data. Thus, this week our Look It Up series turns to the statistical review of world energy consumption, which used to celebrate growth in energy production and consumption and now gnashes its teeth, but thus far still provides reasonably accurate raw data. Including that, in 2023, quote, global primary energy consumption reached a new record for the second consecutive year, with non-OECD countries dominating both the share and annual growth rates. Fossil fuels continue to underpin their development, accounting for 84% of their energy mix, end quote. So clearly, and despite all the money and propaganda being thrown at unreliable renewables, people had the good sense to rely mostly on the stuff that works. Including that, quote, in 2023, global coal production reached its highest ever level, 179 EJ, beating the previous high set the year before. The Asia-Pacific region accounted for nearly 80% of global output, with activity concentrated in just four countries, Australia, China, India, and Indonesia, jointly responsible for 97% of the region's output. China alone was responsible for just over half of total global production, end quote. So, boo China? No, instead we read elsewhere, quote, China plays key role on climate change, maybe looked to for additional leadership, COP30 president says, end quote. So, boo Trump or something. Finally, from the CO2science.org archive, Solarum dulcamara L is an invasive vine that seems to grow everywhere despite being unwelcome anywhere, being variously hissed at as bittersweet, bitter nightshade, felonwort, poisonberry, snakeberry, and blue bindweed. At least Wikipedia says that incidents of poisoning from it are rare because the whole thing tastes so awful. But whether we like it or not, we're likely to be seeing more of it, because in 2005 and 2006, 10 experiments showed an additional 300 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the air yielded a 46.5% boost in the plant's obnoxious growth. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I won't be leaping into committee on climate in China anytime soon.